Blog Talk Radio.
This is what it is, okay? I said, empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now, you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now, water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Good evening once again, folks. This is the Grindhouse, the two-part double feature show featuring Captain Kirk and Darryl B. First up, of course, is the Comic Shop. Second up, if there's such a word as second up, is Afro-Nerd Radio at 7 p.m. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We're going to discuss all things pulp, sci-fi, fantasy, video gaming, you name it. We're going to have a nerd fest. Okay, first up, we got to go into a little bit of funk first, a little bit of nerdcore funk, I should say. An oldie but goodie, one of my favorites from His Royal Badness, a skosh of Bat Dance from the Batman, the 1989 version, that soundtrack. So let's groove a little, and we'll be back with more pulp-flavored discourse. Let's groove.
Oh, I got a live one here.
I'm pretty sure the captain knows that it's hard for me to disengage, especially when the funk hits the fan. Again, His Royal Badness, that is the Bat Dance from the 1989 version of Batman, the film, the soundtrack. Okay, folks, let's just do the damn thing. This is the Grindhouse, a.k.a. the Comic Shop. First up, Captain Kirk. Let's get to it.
I have arrived. Let's go.
And, of course, the indefatigable Darryl B.
I hope you folks are ready. Falling Skies tomorrow.
Continuum had its sneak previews, and I hope everybody caught that the Venture Brothers has returned.
Yes, actually, thanks for the link. Folks, go to AfroNerd.com. We have AfroNerd Radio, of course, but we also have AfroNerd.com, and Daryl B's latest blog posting is on there, and he has a link to the most recent episode of The Venture Brothers. We've been waiting for a long time for that Cartoon Network, Adult Swim, to come through. So, and it's better than ever, Daryl. Daryl, it just keeps on. I just couldn't stop laughing. I think it's being written up more. I think some New York Magazine, I believe, wrote a piece on it as if they're just discovering this stuff for the first time. So it's amazing that sometimes these things can be on for many years, because this is the fifth season, and now it has arrived. Now they're looking at it as a pretty complex piece of work, although it's a cartoon. And I have to admit, this last 45-minute episode, you practically have to have a master's degree to understand it, or at least have a real working knowledge of pop culture going back a bit. They're pulling out so many references. Quiz Boy, that whole scene, Daryl, where he's going in and out. I mean, you know, I was able to follow because I got it. But someone walking in, they're not going to get it. Excellent programming. Yeah. For the true geek, you cannot miss the Venture Brothers.
Yeah, and let's just say I won't be wearing green anytime soon.
All right. Listen, I get what you're talking about on that one. All right. Let's go quickly. You know, I sent out this link to this latest story. It's being covered on the internet in many different comic book related websites. We've been talking about, and I think others have been mentioning this anyway, the need for a quote unquote Black Avengers. We know the normal team up, especially since we had this movie that just came out last year. But there are, of course, and there have been, Avengers of color enough where it has been bandied about that, well, why not have a team up of just Black Avengers? And you know, you heard whispers, and it might be disconcerting. Anytime you try to do any kind of Black imprint of something, it's always controversial. But now this Mighty Avengers is coming out. They're not calling it a Black Avengers, but it's like three quarters Black Avengers. So what's your thoughts on this, Daryl? Let's go to you.
Well, my thoughts are, you know what? Hey, in theory, it's perfect. It's cool. I have no problem with thinking about it in theory. Majority Black team. My problem comes with the artist chosen. All right. If you're new to this show, you're probably not going to get this. All right? But by putting Greg Land on this book, you essentially have put, instead of Pepsi or Coca-Cola, CC Cola on this thing. This dude uses the same 10 poses, the same 5 or 6 porn faces, he is not a talented artist. Yet people buy his stuff. And so, in that respect, I guess I should be happy. The book is going to sell. But if you're thinking you're going to see Black people in this, no. No, you're going to see a bunch of Storms in this. Yes, I said it. You're going to see a bunch of Storm-type characters, a bunch of Black and ethnic characters in this who look nothing like Black and ethnic characters. And if you disagree with me, all right, tell me the Greg Land book you have picked up where you've seen minority characters drawn, and he's now doing Iron Man, all right? Before it was Uncanny X-Men. Before that, it was Ultimate Power. Just look at how he draws ethnic faces and tell me they're definable Latino. They're definable Black. They're definable Asian, outside of the eyes. All right? Tell me that he could draw features. That's why I'm liking this product, but I'm hating this product at the same time because they put a hack job of an artist on this damn book. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, I see that if anyone were to do a cursory review on the internet, Greg Land does have his detractors. Now, I've seen some of his work. It's not the worst I've ever seen. But I do think you are onto something because, you know, we've mentioned this before. Anytime there appears to be, I don't want to say this is some kind of conspiracy, Daryl, but anytime there appears to be a black themed book, they get lousy artists. And it almost seems as if you are positioning, or the companies are positioning these books to fail. I don't understand why. We saw what happened with Mr. Terrific. If Mr. Terrific was done, I mean, the character is positioned as like the third smartest being in the DC universe. If his life were really explored the way it's supposed to be, you know, his wife dies. I mean, that's usually what acts as the catalyst for many superheroes is that somebody has to die. His wife dies. He's an extremely, extremely accomplished character, multiple degrees, PhDs. He's one of the smartest beings on the planet. And yet, when he was given his own book, the book's art sucked. So, Daryl is onto something about this. I'm familiar with Land's work. I'm not going to lie about that. I'm familiar with it. I've seen far worse. It's kind of hit or miss for me, to be honest with you. Some of it, not that bad. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to call it because I'm thinking of his work with the Ultimate Fantastic Four. He drew Namor to look ethnic, dare I say. I mean, so what's up with that? He makes Namor look pretty ethnic.
Well, again, like I said, for every one example you give me, I can give you 10, 12 examples of where he botched stuff. And when I say botch, I mean screwed royally. There's no nice way of saying it for me, you know? So I was happy. Oh, Luke Cage is helming the book. That's cool. Getting Monica Rambeau in the book. That's cool.
Blue Marvel.
Blue Marvel, where they're not played like jokes. Hi, Mux Wave. Where they're not played like jokes and say, ha, you see, we finally gave him a book where we're going to be derogatory towards him the whole damn time, you know? But, again, if this was a Sarah Pichelli from Ultimate Spider-Man, if this was a Nicola Scott from Secret Six, if this, you know, any other artist, I'd be feeling much better about it, but it's Greg Land. I'm sorry if I'm letting personal bias get into it, but he can't draw without tracing. And he uses the same poses and the same faces over and over and over again. You know, I have people get on Mark Bagley from Amazing Spider-Man and Ultimate Spider-Man all the time. About, oh, he can't do this, he can't do that, he doesn't have range. But one of the artists they throw back at me, you know who has range? Greg Land. And I always look at those people like, are you guys effing kidding me? This is one of those situations. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
And also, I want to bring the captain in on this, but to give further edification for our audience, we have to remind our listening audience that the Mighty Avengers, again, it's not just the Avengers. I mean, I guess for the sake of, I mean, let's be honest, Daryl, Marvel isn't above trying to milk an idea. You know, the X-Men, one of the other criticisms toward these books is just how many books end up coming out when a particular intellectual property becomes so popular, hence the X-Men. You know, I got turned off by the X-Men at some point because there were 15 books and counting probably of the X-Men, and none of them are intertwined. That's one chief complaint. It wouldn't be so bad to have all these different books, but they're disparate books. So now the Avengers are the intellectual property of the moment, and now we have all these books. Now, however, the Mighty Avengers, which is what this is, is a relaunch of a book that I absolutely loved that came out in 2007. Now, when the Mighty Avengers came out in 2007, it was a Bendis slot show creation. I'm a big Frank Cho fan. He can do no wrong to me. I love his art. His art is, you know, he draws. Honestly, I probably, if I ever see this guy at a convention, I'll probably, you know, say something off color. But he draws from a black male perspective. He's an Asian man, but I'm not going to go any further, but just check out Frank Cho's. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you're venturing into very, very troubled waters right here, son.
Why do you say? Why you don't like Frank Cho's art?
Let him go.
Because there's no easy way to describe this without offending somebody. I'm just going to say it like that.
But hold on. That's what it's all about, though. If a book didn't drop and you didn't have different opinions on a book, you'd be a bunch of indoctrinated pop individuals. And that's not what the comic book world is about at the ground level. At the movie level, we know it is. But not at the ground level. So this is what we need. This is healthy arguments. Let's go.
Well,
Mr. Apple Nerd.
Well, this is my thing. As a supporter of Frank Cho's work, and I think this has been said before, he doesn't draw his characters as like skinny, waif-like creatures. They seem to have kind of a full bodiness, especially female forms. The female, listen, especially minorities have a tendency to, and I'm speaking generally here, their views of beauty are different than the mainstream norm. He draws these bodies like he draws in the way a black man. I mean, a black man would like to see a body drawn, especially the female form. I'll put it that way. I think he even had a calendar that's out. So I mean, the butts are 100%. Frank Cho knows how to draw a woman to me. So that's why I like what he does. So unfortunately, I mean, when the Mighty Avengers came out the first time, I was on top of that book. Because I love the way Frank Cho draws his work. This one with Mr. Land, I'm not, like you said, he's known for tracing. And for those who are not familiar with the term tracing, it literally means what it implies. He will look at something, a real-life drawing, and just trace over it. So that, you know, visually it can work. Sometimes it doesn't work, but people look at that as not really being authentic. So, but I guess I'm not surprised because, Daryl, that's the main question, is why when minority-themed books come out, we get shortchanged somehow. We don't get, like, Gary Frank. You know, I love Supreme Power, obviously, because people love his work. He knows how to draw, unquestionably.
Again,
Captain, your thoughts on this?
Well, the question now is you know, some people might say that they're not getting shortchanged, and also it has to do with who's making the final decision. That has a lot to do with it. That's ultimately what it is. It's something that we rail against on a regular basis here on this show and, of course, on other shows. That's ultimately what it comes down to. You know, some people might say, powers that be, that you're not getting shortchanged. That's what they would say. But on the ground floor, you turn around and you say, well, you know, the book is not like this. It's not like that. You know, when they do these other characters, these characters are more like this. They're more like that. You know, so, again, it comes back to who's making the decisions at the top. That's ultimately what it comes back down to. That's the reality of it.
Now, what about Al Ewing, Daryl? Al Ewing is going to be writing this thing. What about that side of it? Maybe
we
have to depend more on the writing.
Yeah, Al Ewing is an accomplished writer. He's done, at least on the indie scene, he's done a couple of books that have been favorites there. Again, the writing isn't the problem with me here. And don't get me wrong, this book is likely going to make money because Land has his fans that literally follow him from book to book buying up the stuff. My problem is if you want a book to appeal to the masses, I don't think Greg Land's your artist. Because honestly, Greg Land fits every stereotype that non-comic book collectors have about comic books in terms of the art. I can't stress that one enough, at least in my opinion. And again, it's my opinion. But folks, look, pick up Ultimate Power. Pick up the latest Iron Man, or at least thumb through it in the comic shop. See Greg Land's art and tell me that the faces are different, that the poses are different. Like, literally, I could go through a book and see the same pose used 5 or 6 different times. I could see the same face on every page. This is how bad this guy is. Compared to this guy, I will pick up every Rob Liefeld book in creation.
Oh, God.
Before I pick up a Greg Land book. That's how much I hate this dude. And the problem is, his earlier work, he was a good artist. He is lazy. He is lazy, 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 and doesn't know the word definition if you hit him over the head with a dictionary. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
All right. We're going to go to a quick musical break, gentlemen.
Wow.
Just one question. That's pretty big. I mean, for him to mention Rob Liefeld. Because, listen, Rob Liefeld in the early 90s was extremely popular. But when you look at his work now, it's laughable. It's laughable. But he was quite successful. Very successful. So, you know, but, Captain, you may want to do a Google search on Mr. Land, Greg Land, images. Go to images, Google, and look at his stuff. I mean, from someone who's not really a keen observer, his work might look impressive, to be honest with you. You know, there's a certain type of surrealism with how he draws. If what he classifies as drawing, if that could be classified as drawing, but like what Daryl's talking about, if you look beyond that, excuse me, it might be a little shameful. I don't know. I'm just tired of these books getting shortchanged in some way. But listen, these guys want these books to go off the shelf, so we'll see how that works out. All right, listen, let's go to a quick break. More nerdcore music. This is one of my favorite albums, I should say, when they did make albums. Saturday Morning Cartoons Greatest Hits. This is Gigantor, probably one of the early anime efforts. This is the Gigantor theme done by Helmet. Oh, about 2 minutes, and then we'll be right back. Hold on, folks.
Against wrong.
Okay, folks, once again, that was Helmet from Saturday Morning Cartoons, a redo of the Gigantor anime theme. That was the Gigantor theme by Helmet. The call-in number, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. This is Saturday's Grindhouse, the comic shop first at 6 p.m., and, of course, Afternoon Radio featuring Captain Kirk coming up in about half an hour at 7 p.m. All right, listen, gentlemen, let's get back into the fold. I want to move things along a little bit. Actually, just briefly, this is something that can be found on Daryl's blog piece and AfroNerd.com, folks. Once again, I would implore our listenership to take a peek at AfroNerd.com, check out his latest blog posting. And you mentioned something that I saw somewhere else, but I'm glad you mentioned this thing because it does irk me. This is a video gaming disclosure, folks. We discussed the actual game a few weeks ago, and I love the game. It's, of course, Injustice. Injustice, which is a JLA Justice League-based, Justice League-themed video game. And every week or every 2 weeks, you get a DLC, you get a downloadable character. This time around, for reasons unknown, I mean, this is laughable, Daryl. And I love the game. They decided to provide us with Scorpion from the Mortal Kombat franchise as a downloadable character for Justice League. And all I can sit here and say, wait a minute, just how many characters does – how many intellectual properties does DC have? And why jump around all these characters? God forbid we have a Black Lightning DLC. God forbid. Or a Vixen DLC, or Plastic Man, or anybody. But you skip all that stuff that we want to see for Scorpion. I mean, this is what happens. You have NetherRealm Studios. NetherRealm is the operation that is responsible for the Mortal Kombat franchise. I mean, make another Mortal Kombat. Make Mortal Kombat 10. Do we have to do this? Or rather, throw that in maybe, I don't know. Well, we went past maybe 5 or 6 more DLCs. We barely have enough DLCs as it is now. What is this, Daryl? Why is this?
As the captain says, it's all about the green. It's all about the money. They don't have the expansive thinking to realize that, hey, we have a wide variety of characters in the DC universe we haven't touched yet. No, we're going to go and we're going to water down one of the most violent characters in video game history to put him into this game. Like, all right, fans out there, all right, if you think I'm wrong, think back to DC versus Mortal Kombat. How violent was that game? Think about how much it had to be watered down for DC to lend their characters to it, or DC characters to be put into it. All right? Now you're going to take Scorpion and put him in Injustice, and he's not going to be able to do bloodletting. Because think about it. Yo, DC's all about protecting their image while making that dollar. How much do you think he's going to be free to do in this book, or excuse me, in this video game? Like that's what rubs me the wrong way about it. If they said, okay, we're putting Scorpion into the game and he'll have the full use of his abilities, I'll be like, hey, all right, now we're cooking with gas. As it is, I don't trust this worth a darn. But my thanks to Gavik over at fourthletter.net for providing the article and the rundown. But at the same time, oh, come on, DC. Come on, NetherRealm. There's so many other characters to choose from. Back to you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going through my own personal Rolodex, Daryl. Think about, I mean, even on the villain side, you could have had Mr. Freeze. You could have had Poison Ivy. You could have gone through – I mean, that's just really – that's not even I mean, you know, that's just Batman's rogues gallery. You could have gone through Flash's rogues gallery. You could have had Mirror Master. You could have had the Trickster. I mean, we can go on and on. You could have had a Golden Age Flash. You could have had Kid Flash or Beast Boy. I mean, I can go on and on. I mean, the Metal Men, for Christ's sake. You know how many? I mean, I've just off Red Tornado. There are just so many characters that I would want to see and how their power set could be perceived in this world. And you go to Scorpion. That's outside the franchise. I mean, I would appreciate Scorpion, honestly. I would appreciate him more. I mean, this is a different company. But at least with the Marvel side, Marvel versus Capcom thing, I could see kind of a mix and mash of – because it's kind of gearing itself towards that. You know, they've gone to all these movie franchises. What is it that the movie franchise they've used before, Daryl, in that one? They used the one that has the movie that comes out, like the seventh movie of this franchise. They use those characters in that.
Great. All right. The actress
that was in I think she's going to be actually in The Expendables. That actress, her franchise.
Oh, not Fast and Furious.
Michelle Rodriguez also appears in that franchise.
Resident Evil.
Yeah, Resident Evil. They use Resident Evil characters in Mortal Kombat. No, it gears itself for having a whole bunch of, like, I wouldn't be shocked to see John McClane in that, which would be kind of cool.
Think about it. In Mortal Kombat, they've used Freddy Krueger. There's been a lot of cross-pollination. And, hell, we all love Marvel versus Capcom, and they cross-pollinate that. But here's the difference. With Marvel versus Capcom, with the downloadable characters that are entered in, it makes sense. How does Scorpion make sense in Injustice for All? Gods Among Us? How does Scorpion make sense to be there over other DC characters? That's the problem here. Back to you.
Well, you know what? They would argue. I just forgot about this. Just remembered. Didn't Warner Brothers buy out those characters years ago, like maybe 3 or 4? I mean, when I first heard about them buying out the characters, I said, okay, wait a minute. If we can see them in comic book form, that might be interesting. But we haven't seen that yet. I believe, I have to double check on that, but didn't it come out that Warner Brothers bought out, because we were expecting with the Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe, they made money, but they went bankrupt or something, and then I believe Warner Brothers bought them out, and that's how we ended up with even having a Mortal Kombat 9. I have to do the research. Obviously, that's why they're there, because they own that character. So maybe, you know, there's always a business element. Follow the money. So they're going to tell you, hey, we own that character, but we've yet to, you know, then use him. But he has nothing to do, because this is a storyline based fighting game. Scorpion's not in this story. All right.
Well, he is now.
Yeah, they're wedging him in anyway. They're going to do that. All right. Moving right along. Not always trying to be racially themed. Not always, but I'm going to go into this again anyway. I found this little bit interesting. This is courtesy of comicbookresources.com, folks. Again, comicbookresources.com. And they have a little blurb that I really didn't know about. But we've talked about the premise before. Now they're expanding this thing, and this was based on, I guess, some kind of rumor. And there's a section of Comic Book Resources called Comic Book Legends Revealed. So on Comic Book Legends Revealed number 422, they go in on this rumor about the Ultimate Universe. Now, for those who unfamiliar with this, I mean, by now you should know, the reason why you have a Sam Jackson, a black Nick Fury, in print and in film in cinema is because of the ultimate line, a separate universe of a more modernized take of many of these characters that you and I have been speaking about for the last couple of years now. So in the Ultimate Universe, when they were coming up with the premise of an Ultimate Universe, there was talk that getting away from the normal Captain America, the Captain America that we all know, they were going to explore the notion of a black Captain America. Now, a few weeks ago, we spoke about the Truth comic because of the creator of that book died recently. So there was a rumor that they were going to explore a black Captain America coming out of that Truth comic book that dealt with a black Captain America, that dealt with a kind of Tuskegee experiment-inspired kind of pseudo-historical re-envisioning of the Rebirth Project. For those who are unknown, Rebirth is the government name in Marvel lore that allowed for there to be a Captain America. The whole experiment was done under Project Rebirth. It makes sense that in the 1940s, 1930s, the government, based on the real-life Tuskegee experiment where black folk were experimenting on a real-life project that lasted for over 40 years, where black men who were suffering with syphilis were untreated on purpose by the American government just to see what would happen. Very deep, very real. So the beauty of Marvel, I have to give props to Marvel, allowed for this retconning, retro continuity, that allowed for black soldiers, a comic book that dealt with black soldiers being experimented on before it was perfected and given to Steve Rogers. Folks thought that because of the Truth book, that they were going to, and the success of that book, that, why not continue with this theme? And if we're going to develop an ultimate line, let's have a black Captain America. We're finding out that was false. It's false because, first of all, the Truth comic doesn't predate the Ultimate book. It looks like the Ultimate book came out before the Truth. So did you know about this, Darryl? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, my thoughts about it is that's been a misconception for years on the net. But all it would take is, and Brian Cronin did his job here, he looked at the publication dates. And like you just said, the Ultimates came out first. My thing about that was, We needed all the proof about how fandom would take it when, if you remember, before when they were speculating on the Captain America movie, who was the first guy that people started floating the name out? Will Smith. Let Will Smith be Captain America. And they cited the Truth, and you heard how much fandom went into an uproar, and then Will Smith got saddled with Hancock. You know, it was just the fact, no, he can't be Captain America, da, 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 da. Mind you, budding superstar, you know, all right? But I would have thought it would be progressive. And the Ultimate Universe has made progressions in several ways. The late Wasp was Asian, you know. We're seeing the Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man character, Nick Fury. You know, they've made several strides, but have they used it to its utmost potential in changing characters, updating them, making them more modernized? No, of course not, because there's a segment of fandom, there's a segment of business that never wants change. We want that, the same thing we've had since blah, blah, blah. It's right before or right now. And that sort of thinking consistently has you stuck in the mud in terms of sales. You'll lose old fans and you're not getting new ones fast enough. So, hey, that's This is part of my reasoning with the Human Torch thing again. You know, this is part of my reasoning. You have to change with the times in certain respects. There will be a segment of fandom that wants to have what they've always had. But if you want to be progressive and you want to match society, society is always changing. I mean, it feels like us sometimes that society is stuck in the mud, but you just turn on your television. Look on the news. There are things changing every day. You know? Hey, it was only 28 years ago that the first black newscaster was aired nationwide. Sure, it was black newscasters locally, but it was only 28 years ago that you had an official black newscaster nationwide. All right? It's little stuff like that, you know? And with the Ultimate Universe, you had a chance to make a lot of changes. They did in some respects, they failed in others. And it's still going on. We'll see what they do, but, you know, we as the buying public as much to blame as the businesses themselves if we keep on buying the same old dreck. Back to you, Asimer.
Yeah, quickly, you know, listen, just to give more clarification on this issue, and then we're going to move along, the truth came out December 2002, almost, you know, December 2002, January 2003. That's what we're talking about. And Ultimates was early 2002. So, again, the Ultimates did come out before the Ultimates. The Truth came out later, came out after the Ultimates. But there was talk about there being a black, for the Ultimate line, a black Captain America. What did them in? According to, I guess, Marvel is saying that there would have been a conflict as to how this would have played out for intellectual property reasons, that almost everywhere you can see and market, there's always been a white Captain America. What they're saying is that if there were a black one, this re-envisioning would have been confusing, that it would have wreaked havoc. And it's, you know, they're saying it's all about fiscal considerations. That's the term they're using. It said, this is coming in from comic book resource. I'm going to go specifically into what they said. They said, we have so many companies that license out the image of Captain America, and that particular image of Captain America is of Steve Rogers, a white American male, Quesada said. So we couldn't go in that direction with Cap. But Marvel wouldn't let the idea die. Fan reaction was too strong, though it wasn't necessarily positive. They go further and they say, the first time, let's see. Oh, geez.
All right.
I just got lost.
If you read it.
Let me finish. It says, the first time I had heard the idea, said Truth editor Axel Alonso, was when I heard what a response it had evoked from people on the internet, 90% of whom were severely angry and uncomfortable with the notion of a black man in the Captain America outfit. From there, a common sense question emerged, which is, why would it make people uncomfortable? And eventually, that took us to the Truth. So I guess the Truth was the compromise, since the Truth came after the notion of having a black Captain America. But this is the Ultimate Universe. I've made this complaint before. I'm not really against properties remaining the way that they were. I know Daryl and I go back and forth with this thing. I take issue with when it's time for a film, after all these years, let's get the first one out, done, the way that we're familiar with, experiment later on, or experiment where you can. But to change certain characters just for the sake of political correctness or what have you, I'm not comfortable with that. However, with the comic books in print, if you developed a separate line, a separate universe that's intent on capturing a modern audience, then you should be reflective of a modern audience. I thought that for a new millennium book, the Ultimate should have been far, far more progressive. This is not 1939, 1940. So we're still kind of acting on that same paradigm in 2013, when we're still touchy in the new era. We got a black president. We can't continue. Now we have a black we've had several. Black National Security Advisor. Why are we still doing this?
Well, again, Marvel hangs themselves with their words here. Hey, Cap, you're going to love this. I'm going to catch them in there. What did they say there? Oh, Captain America has been known to be a white male all this time, blah, blah, blah. All right. So you guys have Nick Fury as black in the Ultimate Universe. The trademark for his trademark, if you read any of the books, his trademark under there is Ultimate Nick Fury, trademark. So why couldn't there be a black Captain America, Ultimate Captain America? You could as the trademark. I mean, you do it with Nick Fury.
Let's have the captain get on. The captain isn't really saying much. Captain, what's up?
Well, they would turn around and say, you know, Captain America, just as D. Burt aptly stated, you know, it's really he's a much bigger character. He's more impactful. So I'm totally in agreement with what Daryl says, and I'm also totally in agreement with Afro Nerd says. But the reality is, only in comic book lore, you can have things that are written in stone, and it just pulled out of stone and switched around. So we can get emotional and use sensible thought, because what you're actually saying, Afro Nerd, is very sensible. But we see it a lot of times. They don't use sense. They just do exactly what they want to do. In comic books, you have something known as alternate timelines, alternate universes. These allow for you to do whatever you want to do after the first character is totally established. Now you can switch it around. That's the reality of it. But Captain America, you know? That's all. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, you know what's disturbing, though, and I probably said this umpteenth time, is that these are not the mainstream characters. You know, the beauty of the comic book world, as the captain just so correctly stated, is that you can do anything. You can explore just about anything as long as you set up the premise. The premise is, okay, this is a different Earth. This is Earth 616. This is Earth 712. Whatever. I mean, DC does it. Marvel has done this. And yet, what makes me angry with these racist fans is that Captain America must be white in 1,000 universes. That sounds ludicrous to me. Captain America must be white in every circumstance. And we saw this with the Ultimate Spider-Man. The Ultimate Spider-Man was killed off. I mean, first of all, he should have been black in my world. He should have been black the first time out because it's the ultimate line. Let's do things a little bit different this time. It's an ultimate book. You already have the mainstream book. The ultimate book should have been far more experimental. The world is especially the fact that the publishing enterprises are in New York. In New York. New York is probably the most diverse center in the world. And the companies, the printing arm of Marvel and DC are in New York. If that's the case, reflect New York properly. Reflect New York. So it seems like they have to kind of trip into it. It always has to be hinted. It's like pulling teeth to have alternate depictions where it's plausible. I'm not even saying let's just turn Spider-Man black all of a sudden. What I'm saying is you've developed an ultimate Marvel. Ultimate Marvel, just by its implications, means ultimate. Ultimate means there should be so many different variations on the old school theme. But why even have an ultimate line if it's exactly like the one from 1963? It's still
hey.
Or 62. When did Amazing Fantasy come out, Daryl? 62, right?
I thought it was 63.
Maybe you're right. 62? Maybe you're right. I think Ditko, I think it was 62. Because Fantastic Four is 61, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, heck, Fantastic Four for an ultimate, that could have been anybody's fan. It could have been completely different. I mean, Ben Grimm could have been Ben Grimm could have been black, actually, for the ultimate one. These guys went to school together. They're not related. They're friends. He could have been anybody. He could have been Asian. He could have been Middle Eastern. It could have been so diverse. Heck, Sue Storm could have been a black woman in an ultimate book. Just to make it radically different. These guys, they keep on with the same, like, why are you repeating the same story 50 years later? He had a different origin. It could have been a whole different thing. I mean, why create a book and call it the ultimate book if it's going to be, I don't know. I mean, I've told this story before, and it breaks my heart in a way. It was very, I'm not the most emotional guy, but it really meant something to me. When I was in a comic book store, and the Miles Morales ultimate book first came out, and it was a Latina, young Latina came into the store. She had to be around 12, 13, and she said, I got to get this book. Where's the Miles Morales book? My last name is Morales. I looked at it, I was like, whoa. That's when it really hit me. It hit me like, wow, this thing is big. That a girl, first the gender issue and the ethnic issue, is a girl coming in, she's immediately identifying this book. And that's half the problem. You gotta have these heroes as an imprint for people. They gotta be able to see themselves. They have to have a mirror. And this young girl comes in asking for Miles Morales specifically because she could identify with it. It's a lot larger than one could ever know. But 2013, we still having issues. I mean, listen, 1939. We could even have this conversation. We were still driving cabs for the spirit.
And we'd be banned from the airwaves. We wouldn't even get to the airwaves.
Yeah, but even in depictions, there were blacks in comics in the 30s, well, I should say 40s and 50s, but they were wholesale minstrels. You know, what was it, a Whiteout? What was the character that was in? Was he in Plastic Man or? I think his name. I forgot what character he's. No. Or maybe it was an All Winter Squad. Not All Winter. I'm sorry. What was the teenage with Bucky and Toro. What was that book called? I think it was
The All Winter Squad. Oh, Young Allies.
Yeah, Young Allies. And didn't they have a black character on there, but I think he was called Whitewash or something?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. Like I said, these are things I prefer not to remember.
Well, listen, you got to remember this stuff because it goes to show you what the mindset was then and why years later, well, they would do things, that, you know, to screw with your color. You know, if you're black, we're going to call you white. You know, it's something, it was very terrible. They had no powers. They were there purely as like a step and fetch it kind of thing. I mean, this is what you were thought of back then.
Yeah, I guess in that vein, I have to thank Avengers Assemble, the animated, for making a great Falcon character. It's just the rest of that thing sucks, you know, in terms of writing. I guess that's why I love Green Lantern, the animated series, but I hate DC at the same time for pulling it before we got introduced to Jon Stewart. I mean, I love Young Justice for proving me wrong and making Calder Aqualad so good. But the problem is, before you could explore more stuff with him, that got yanked. You know, every time it seems you make a step forward, something shoots you in the foot and you're stumbling five steps back.
Well, you know, just to clear things up, and we will figure it out. Our CPUs are working, evidently, Daryl. The character was in Young Allies, and he was Whitewash Jones.
Yes,
Whitewash Jones was a character in Young Allies in the 40s as this, you know, I guess a precursor to the Teen Titans or what have you, or Young Avengers, but Whitewash Jones. That was his name.
Yeah. Now,
and, you know,
just,
just think about this, right? You walk into the editor's office. Hey, I got a character. You what's his first name? Whitewash. Oh God.
We've
gotten some enlightenment, but damn, that's bad.
Listen, the late great Dwayne McDuffie was fighting these battles in the 90s. In the 90s. So this is why, you know, it's disturbing. And you know something else? We got about 4 minutes remaining, gentlemen, so obviously we're going to have to cut this. But I listen to a lot of podcasts during the week, all types, and I listen to my fair share of comic book-themed podcasts. And when you hear how many – I was listening to a podcast roundtable, and you have queer comic podcasts.
Okay.
Now, go by what this implies, okay? On this roundtable, I heard all these different podcasters talking. Now, mind you, there was no minority base as far as, like, there was no Afro nerd at this thing. That's a problem. I didn't hear any Latino representation also. But they had women. They had, like, a woman-based podcast at this round table, and they heard something with a queer in it. And I sat there, I said, you know what? That's the way that is – whatever you think, that representation – is something that's being pushed. God bless them. That there's a comic book queer. I suspect several of them, or more than several. Just as there are black themed podcasts like this, black themed comic book fantasy podcasts. This is the new world order, and comic books are still slow to reflect this. You know,
there's fans in every walk of life. I keep on telling people, there's good people, there's bad people, every walk of life. Your old things are typecasting roles. Your old things are typecasting stereotypes. Your old thing, through all your old prejudices, it is 2013. Throw them out the window, because you're going to get fans and haters from every walk of life.
And you know, this we got about 2 minutes, just quickly. If really done properly, these characters can be probably the most popular characters if done right. I'm a big supporter of the Middle Eastern Lantern, his whole thing. I like that Lantern, the way he has his own history that they're working on. I mean, they hope they don't drop the ball. John Stewart, all these things. To have a diverse comic book tapestry, when it works out, it's the best. All right, gentlemen, listen, we've got less than a minute. We got to get out of here. Darryl, as always, we'll do it again next week. Captain, stay tuned. Audience, stay tuned. We have Afro Radio coming up in a few moments. See you next week for the comments.
Spark with a beard?
I think not.
Knuckleheads, come on. What y'all take a look at that sign up there?
what it says. Cash for your home. You know what that is?
Billboard.
What are y'all, Amos and Andy? You step in and he's fetches? I'm talking about the message, what it stands for. It's called gentrification. It's what happens when the property value of a certain area is brought down. Huh? You listening?
Yeah.
To bring the property value down. They can buy the land at a lower price. Then they move all the people out, raise the property value, and sell it at a profit. Now, what we need to do is we need to keep everything in our neighborhood, everything, black. Black-owned with black money. Just like the Jews, the Italians, the Mexicans, and the Koreans do.
Ain't nobody from outside bringing down the property value. It's these folk shooting each other and selling that crack rock and shit.
Well, how you think the crack rock gets into the country? We don't own any planes. We don't own no ships. But we are not the people who are flying and floating that shit in here. I know every time you turn on the TV, that's what you see, black people selling the rock,
right.
pushing the rock. Yeah, I know. But that wasn't a problem as long as it was here. It wasn't a problem until it was in Iowa, and it showed up on Wall Street where there are hardly any black people. Now, if you want to talk about guns, why is it that there's a gun shop on almost every corner in this community?
Why?
Tell you why. For the same reason that there's a liquor store on almost every corner in the black community. Why? They want us to kill ourselves. You go.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in the cosmos, where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bird, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. The second half has arrived. This is Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afternoon Radio. The time is 7.03 p.m., folks. We have a lot to get into. I want to give you a quick groove, though, a quick groove. That was also, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this. That was from 1990's Boys in the Hood, John Singleton's first effort. And that particular piece, that diatribe, you can definitely go to YouTube and find it. Pretty interesting. Of course, the great Lawrence Fishburne, he's there. Who else is there? You know what? Whitman Mayo, Grady from Sanford and Son, he was there. So, you know, that's a pretty important film. Unfortunately, I think a lot of other films that came after it started to get more derogatory. Really wasn't done that well, became more of a minstrel theme. But I would say that and maybe Menace to Society were the best of that genre, where they were nuggets of truth before the exploitation came. So I have to give kudos for that particular film, 1990's Boys in the Hood. All right, let's go to a quick groove, folks. I'm going to give you a classic joint. As ever, we always do urban alternative music here, and this is a classic. This is I Don't Know Why. This is a Stevie Wonder cover. Stevie Wonder wrote this song, Michael Jackson covered it, and now the Rolling Stones, they also covered it as well. This is the Rolling Stone version of I Don't Know Why. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove. Thank you. enough of that. I don't know if our audience can handle that once again. That was the legendary Rolling Stones doing a Stevie Wonder cover. I don't know why. I don't know why. All right, folks, listen. This is the second part, After Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, and could not do the show without Captain Kirk. Captain, let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Larry Fishburne was dropped into science back in 1990 in that movie. Enough said, let's get it started.
Yeah, we're talking about 23 years ago now, ladies and gentlemen, and the problems still persist. Matter of fact, they persist on steroids. They persist on steroids. I think things are worse now than they were back then in some regards. All right, Captain, just one quick thing I want to just mention off, just to get off my chest, just kind of a anecdotal thing. No big deal, but something I was thinking of. Earlier today, I happened to listen to Wilmer Leon, or Wilmer Leon, who's a broadcaster on SiriusXM. And he was interviewing the great, very legendary singer, one of my favorites, Mavis Staples from the Staple Singers. And I'm going to try my best to try to get her on the show because we've been fortunate enough to get certain people that are legends, whether it's Jody Watley, whether it's Andre Simone, whether it's Maceo Parker, the great Maceo Parker. Getting Mavis Staples would be a high point for me because I grew up with her music as a youngster. You know, the Oracle would play the Staple Singers. And when she was being interviewed, and again, folks, she's one of our preeminent, America's preeminent singers. I mean, I love Chaka Khan. I love all these great artists that are still with us. Fortunately, they're still with us. And I'm listening to her, and I'm thinking about what it was like, you know, the landscape, Captain, where her music was being played, whether it was Curtis Mayfield, Stevie Wonder, you name it, James Brown, all these people, they were being played in the background, just as normal as Nicki Minaj and Drake and Rick Ross and Lil Wayne, as these artists are being played right now. And I'm sitting there, I'm saying, you know what? It can't be coincidental that when her music was being played more frequently. She has a new album coming out, by the way. That is it just a coincidence that black families were intact? The numbers weren't exactly where they are now. We were tracking a certain way collectively as a community. Dare I say, black consciousness was more pronounced than it is now. I don't recollect seeing too much minstrelsy. I mean, listen, you had black exploitation cinema going on at that time. But still, I don't remember having to wince about some of the clowns that we see today. So I have to have this woman come through, this lady come through and really remind us where we were. I think black folks forget what it was like 25, 30, 35, 40 years ago as a culture, even entertainment-wise. What was before us and what's before us now, and this is at a time when the BITCH word wasn't going around, the N-word wasn't in your face. Matter of fact, if the N-word were used on wax at that time, it was a definitive political statement. Political. It wasn't what it is now as some kind of weird black Tourette's, Captain. It wasn't a weird affect. So something is wrong. It can't be coincidence that the musical landscape was completely different. We weren't disrespecting ourselves on wax, and we were on a certain trajectory going upward. Now the music calls you BITCH in rotation, and we're going downward, racing in a Formula One racer to the bottom. Can't be a coincidence. That's it. Folks, Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, the call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Shouting out Q-Storm. Listen, Q, I received your email. I'll talk about it at some point without getting into specifics. So I understand, you know, it's the workplace for you, so I'm not going to go into specifics, but I hear you. What does Oprah say? I hear your name. Some goofy thing she says. I hear your name, Q. So I'm just letting you know I did get your email. All right, folks, limited time, a lot of subjects. Let's just get into it. Captain, I want to pick up on some things that we dropped from the last show. One thing was actually Michael Douglas. Actor Michael Douglas, scion of Kirk Douglas. Actually, Kirk Douglas is one of my favorite actors. You know, he had kind of an angry affect. He would speak through his teeth, and he was kind of, I mean, you know, certain folks have affects that they play on now. When you become this caricature, it's kind of a weird thing. Years ago, you would see someone like Al Pacino. If you see Al Pacino in The Godfather, you didn't get any of that affect that you get now from him that people play on. Same thing with Jack Nicholson. You couldn't necessarily do Jack as you can now. So you see these actors in their early stages, or even De Niro. You're talking to me? You're talking to me? That kind of thing from Taxi Driver. Everyone does that shtick now. So what am I trying to say here? With Michael Douglas, well, Kirk Douglas had that thing anyway. Anyway, Michael Douglas, he made the news in the last couple of years, not so much for his acting, but because of him surviving throat cancer. And he puts out this disclosure that I'm quite thankful for, to be honest with you, but it's being perceived in a different way. His publicist had to pull him to the side the day after he made this comment. And, well, you know, it goes to show you that absolute honesty, there's a price to pay to being honest. He has throat cancer, or had it. He survived it. He was looking quite the thin man, as if he was on his way out. But he survived it. Now I believe he's in remission. There's no traces of cancer to date. So thankfully, we have his acting prowess to still enjoy. But he made a confession. I mean, we've known for a few years. I think he went to some kind of addiction place because of sex addiction. You know, he's out there. He's married to Catherine Zeta-Jones. She's made public of her bipolar issues. So, I mean, listen, these are high-profile people. Sometimes they'll share some things with you that might be of help to the populace. In this case, he said, my throat cancer might not have come from the normal places, i.e., smoking or heavy drinking or that kind of thing. He implied that he was a participant in oral sex with women and that he might have gotten it from there. So this, he comes out, I believe, Andrea Pizer from the New York Post. I believe that's the young columnist's name, young lady's name. And she went on all in, Captain. He shouldn't disclose this. This is disrespectful toward his wife. This is nasty. You know, this is nasty behavior. We didn't need to know this. But then I'm listening to other people who are saying, you know what? He was brave. He disclosed something that's potentially embarrassing. But the bottom line is that you have young people. You have young people within the last, I don't know, 5 years, maybe going back further than that, but 5 years especially, concentrating on Generation Y, that are participating in this sexual act as easy as a handshake. It is going down like that. Mr. Starks from the Honor Guard, your predecessor, he's in the school system. He talks about these issues that it's occurring younger and younger and younger, that younger folk, preteens even, are becoming more sexualized, and they are participating in this specific act more frequently as if it's a handshake, It should not be done, especially at this age, any kind of sexual behavior. But it is happening, and for Michael Douglas to disclose this, I think it's a good thing, because we're pretending that folks do not, that a large number of people do not perform this act. And now folks are going to have to do some kind of capitulation, do some soul searching, and figure this out. And for someone to say, Pizer specifically from the Post, to say he shouldn't have said anything and it's embarrassing to his wife, I don't know about that. I think I would take embarrassment over a wife in lieu of saving lives, especially in this current environment. So I thought he, political correctness, I've said it as an application for some of our own racial, intra-racial woes, Captain. I've said this many times, that political correctness is literally killing black people specifically. But in this case, political correctness is just killing. What are your thoughts on this, on Mr. Douglas's disclosure?
Well, my personal thoughts is this. When I heard about it, I said, this is not like when Matt, I said Michael. When my edit, this is not like when Magic Johnson came out and he said many years ago when he had AIDS. It's not of that same type of gravity. It's not at that same level. This, to me, from my standpoint, it really didn't make a difference either which way. You're dealing with cancer. You catch cancer from various different ways. There's a lot of things going on with cancer when it comes to that, throat cancer and everything else. He said it, or he didn't really have to say it. It didn't really, from my standpoint, my personal standpoint, it didn't really have that gravity that it should, you know, like referring it to like when Magic Johnson came out and he had AIDS. I thought that was really big at the given time, and that was needed. People needed to see that. This is not so much embarrassing, because he's a big man in the game, so to speak, as far as acting is concerned. So I don't think it's something that's really embarrassing at this given point. Maybe if he was 22, it might be embarrassing, even though we know it takes time for cancer to normally happen. He wouldn't catch this type of cancer normally at 22. But I'm just saying, you get my point of view. You know, so, he could have left. He didn't really have to say it, but he did say it. So depending on which side of the fence you're on when it comes to this type of thing, that's all. That's all I'm going to say about it.
I guess my feeling is that once he said it, I didn't really put that much thought into it. It's the reaction of others to it. I thought it was more of an anecdotal kind of thing that he put it out there, because folks are under the impression that you can get throat cancer from smoking and from drinking, and this is an act that many folk are into, especially young people. Maybe someone of his stature, we seem to, rightfully or wrongfully, many people do follow celebrities. And unfortunately, we see what happened with Angelina Jolie, her surviving breast cancer, or really not even having breast cancer, but taking that step as a preventative measure, such a drastic step to do this, because she was tracking in the 90 percentile range of someone who could likely get cancer. So she decided to go take this route, a rather drastic route, to have her breast tissue removed. That was treated as an international thing. Him putting out the oral sex connection, I think you have folks out here that conduct themselves in, you know, many people conduct themselves in a very dangerous way sexually, and maybe someone like him who put it out there as an anecdote, you know, people are making it big, like you shouldn't say anything, but maybe you should say something, because this is an act that people are into that can cause you cancer, that people might believe, especially young people, are under the impression that they're invulnerable. So maybe you might want to be a little bit more careful about who you sleep with and this whole HPV virus, that you can get it that way. I think it's such a touchy subject, and people are so scared to deal with it that the embarrassment. Listen, get over being embarrassed. That's what I'm saying. You know, I look at this, and I hear what you're saying, Catherine, but I look at this as an example of how we treat things internally with, and we talk about this incessantly, so it's not, this is another MP3 file that's on repeat, ladies and gentlemen, but it goes to the same thing. Black folks sometimes or oftentimes are embarrassed, they are embarrassed about some of the minstrelsy and the violence that's occurring even as we speak. If we were more less politically correct about it and spoke about it forthrightly, maybe we can handle it. We can get on top of the issue, and then we can go about our business. But political correctness and embarrassment keeps people from talking about these issues. That's it. Folks, once again, this is AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk, 646-915-9620. I want to go into another topic, then we're going to go to another group. Again, picking up from where we left off from last week. Actually, you know, I want to talk about, I think we, this is kind of another few minutes in this. I mentioned it towards the tail end of the show. There was a piece, I believe it was from The Root, that discussed the idea of collecting racist memorabilia, specifically black folk. And I disclosed that I do collect certain pieces because, well, first of all, I was always shocked that these pieces are around and so readily available. You know, I've only seen, until I owned one, I've only seen for colored only signs in movies. Now, the Oracle and the Wedger, they've experienced that. You know, they've experienced going to movie theaters where blacks were only allowed to view a movie or even, let's say, a live theatrical device in the balcony. Blacks were only allowed to see when the races were segregated. So to be able to buy a colored-only sign or a white-only sign, some of these really reprehensible banks and effects, these whether it's print, you know, things that are in print, posters, pictures, all kinds of household products. I mean, I believe it's important to collect these things to show people this is what we went through. Because if you don't collect them, there's no historical record, and then people can pretend like this world never existed. Folks who survived the Holocaust, there are things that are ugly that I'm fairly certain those of Jewish descent have collected, so people know. You have Holocaust museums. You have to have these things. I believe there's still a lynching museum, the museum that's devoted to when black folk were lynched, where you see photographs and postcards. I mean, it's a very ugly, ugly history. But if you didn't have these things, especially Generation Y, when folks are unfamiliar about Emmett Till, and we saw what happens when ignorance reigns supreme, when Lil Wayne can just scoff at the tragedy of Emmett Till on wax, and it's just another day. Now, fortunately, well, actually, the people that are doing the battle with him, really, and getting him to lose his sponsorship, the Emmett Till family. It's the Till family, specifically, is on top of this. And to a lesser degree, the larger black community. That should not be the case. But a lot of it has to do, Captain, with the fact that there's a great deal of ignorance with the historical record. And I think you're going to have to have these pieces. Agatha Christie, the legendary author, the author that's most known for mystery, the mystery author. Her most famous book one of her most famous books, and also these have been made into theatrical films as well. And Then There Were None. I remember having to read that book. It was a great book, too, a great book, also a movie. And Then There Were None. But that was not the original title of that book, Captain. It was called 10 Little Indians. But it was called something else before that. 10 Little Niggers. was the original title of that book. And then it went down the line. Then it became 10 Little Indians, which was also reprehensible. And then the neutered title is And Then There Were None. Now, someone buying an Agatha Christie book is going to look for And Then There Were None. No knowledge of this history. What you can buy, you know, I actually tried to buy 10 Little Niggers, the book that is, on eBay, and it was quite expensive. But you have to have the book. There has to be a historical record, or ignorance reigns supreme. That's it. Captain, your thoughts? I know you pretty much laid it out last week, but I wanted to revisit it more specifically this week.
Well, to put it simply, you have to know your history based on this science. Being on a four-dimensional plane, that's length, width, height, and the time that it takes to experience all three of them, so it's 4D space. If you do not know your past, you cannot know where you are in the present, and you will never know how to go forward in the future. So it is very necessary to know history. And if this is something, and which it will, obviously it will, it might be shocking to some of you menstruals, but, you know, to the non-menstrual, it won't be so shocking. But this is necessary to help in that development. You have to know the past to know how to move in the present and also how to go forward in the future. It is necessary based on that science. That's all. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, you know, just to get more specifics again, folks, I mean, Agatha Christie's book, 10 Little Niggers, mind you, that was the original title, working title in 1939. Over the years, because of times changing and people, you know, just not allowing this, now the working title is And Then There Were None. But it stems from a British nursery rhyme, 10 Little Niggers. And then it was changed later on, many years later. It took decades for it to get to this point. So, you know, I think it's important. Like, I want to get the original titled book because I think folks need to know. If you don't know, it's as if it never existed. And I think it's more crucial. You know, the funny thing, Captain, and then we'll move along, that what really gets me on this is that you would think that you'd have to have this historical record for young white folk, and you do, so that they are aware that this is part of their history as well. But it is, I think, even more crucial for black folk, for young black folk to be aware of this because of what's going on now. The fact that you have this neo-minstrelsy that is so rampant, and as you have so aptly stated before, about the means and the teams, the technological means, the means and teams that have developed over the years that we look at as, some are looking at as just part of the natural landscape. It's just normal, the way that the rap music and all this imagery and the TV shows and the talk shows and the court shows, all these minstrels that are allowed to flourish, the reality shows, all this that we see, that it dates back to an ugly history, and it's disgusting that it's still, on some level, still flourishing, that we were dealing with these monstrous images 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, and beyond, where the black image and other minority groups went through this as well. Those in the Jewish community are very aware of the caricatures, especially during the early part of the 20th century, the caricatures of how Jewish folk were depicted, exaggerated features. Asian folk are also familiar with this as well. Many minority groups were, heck, we are still fighting to change the names of certain sports teams. Still, isn't this amazing? The Redskins. We have to fight these people as if, can you imagine the Blackskins or the New Jersey Negroes or the New York Jews as a team, how that would go down? And we're still fighting especially folks, Native Americans are still fighting this imagery, but the perception is they are a defeated group. That's the perception. They lost the war. And on some level, we lost the war because the spoils go to the victor, Captain. So when you are on the losing end, you are open to being disrespected. And that's, I think, that is what has happened with black folk. I'm just putting it out there. All right. Listen, folk, this is AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk. We're at the midway point. I think we should do what we do. Let's go to more urban alternative music. I'm going to go to a classic. I'm always going to this guy, my go-to guy, His Royal Badness. One of my favorites. This is a B-side single when we had B-side singles. That's a thing of the past. This is Irresistible Bitch, the original demo version, His Royal Badness. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove. And, of course, more discourse afterward. Hold on. right, folks, this is Royal Badness. You know, I was thinking of something. Folks are going to say, you know, the Afro-Nerd might be a bit hypocritical because his boy just said irresistible bitch. I'm going to tell you the difference. I thought about this. That's the difference, isn't it? I mean, everyone's going to say, well, people like what they like. But now, if he was doing this song with a whole bunch of women, especially women of color, twerking, there might be cause for alarm. I think there's a difference with this song. Well, first of all, I mean, you saw this song performed in concert. I mean, as far as the musicality, it's a totally different. It's you know, it's water and you know, water and dirt. It's different. But I honestly think that the way that it is repeated on wax in rap form, with twerking and the imagery and the way women are treated on these, I think for some reason there's a difference. I think that, first of all, I'm not afraid to say that I like some of my music edgy. I'm not a saint, you know, when it comes to what we listen to, because we do play urban alternative music. I think there's a room for edge. I mean, the historical record, as far as black music, and this is Black Music Month, incidentally, folks. June is Black Music Month. Blues music, jazz music, even the term jazz. It's bawdy music. It's very sexual music, but it was done as innuendo. I think Prince was a master of innuendo, and you don't really know what he was saying. It could be different things. But to say I'm going to put what did Rick Ross say, Captain? He's going to put a Molly. I'm going to put a Molly in this girl's drink and have sex with her, and then she's not going to know it. He said it rather bluntly. It's the nature of rap music where it's said bluntly, not too much innuendo. That's where I take issue. Prince has been a master over the years. And now, and to be honest, he's a mature man, and he's given up on a lot of stuff. You can't even hear this stuff in concert now. So even he has moved beyond some of the more bawdy stuff to the chagrin of his fan base. But in all fairness, this is another thing that people are going to have to explain to me. When you go to a Prince concert and you see his fan base, you see various age groups, various racial groups, highly intellectualized people now. When I went to the last Prince concert, I saw the former mayor of New Orleans, Marc Morial, who's also the current head of the Urban League. He was there funking it up with Afro-Nerd. A lot of high-profile people, when it comes to superior musicianship, and all of his bawdiness, they were there. Now, for the other stuff, we can imagine who's going to be there. I don't know if we're going to see a head of state or some kind of, you know, really, really important individual at a Lil Wayne concert. Maybe. Maybe you will. I'm just saying, black folk, the historical record, we've done bawdy music. But we've done it better. And we did it in a way where folks weren't being... They didn't feel like they were personally being disrespected. That's it. Call me hypocritical if you want, but I think there's a difference. And I think that the outcome is pretty prevalent, comparing the Prince fan to the Lil Wayne fan. Who are these people? The historical record will show that. Heck, Rakim's fan base is different than Lil Wayne's. And I'm not talking about just age, but I've seen people who were high-profile folks who said, you know what, Rakim is the master, and he does rap music. So something is going on. Something is going on. I think the intent is a little different. That's it, Captain. Call me, you know, send the emails. Explain to me where I'm wrong. Maybe I am.
Oh, you will get a few. Some will say, so he's dealing with semantics now? That's just what this is. Some will say... That's what some will say, because they love to, like, you know, go against you at times just to do it.
They can. Listen, they can, and I'm not going to hide away from it, but I do believe that when everything comes out in the wash, I know that the Prince fans, they tend to be somewhat nerdy. Folks who are into this man, folks who kind of know his musical abilities, there's a whole lot to unpack with him. whether it's James Brown, Joni Mitchell. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on with this man, musically and even intellectually as to how he puts his music together. So I just feel, heck, honestly, Kevin, maybe it's some of the stuff, as bawdy as it is, if it was done, if there was more of a real musicality behind it, they might be able to even get away with this stuff better. But it's not. Chief Keef is not a genius. I'm sorry. Not by any stretch of the imagination. You know, there's a little difference between somebody who can play 20 instruments and talk about International Lover on wax and Chief Keef that talks about gangbanging.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's a reason why we were able to have the great educator Marva Collins give all of her accolades to Prince. Prince, in his earlier part of his career, donated some money to her school, her school. Now, this is a man that's singing Irresistible Bitch, but at the same time, he's donating money to one of our great educators. So there's something else going on here. It's got to be. And plus, he's so damn funky. That's it. You know, Lil Wayne is not that funky. I'll put it that way. All right, let's get to it. And then we'll move along. 703, welcome to Afro-Nerd. Tell us who you are and where you are calling from. What's up?
Hey guys, it's George from D.C. How you doing?
All right.
Hey, what's up, man? Nice to hear from you.
Hey, I got to call you on something. Got to give you a little bit of history. You know, Prince been around for 30 years, plus years. I remember when he first came out, people weren't feeling him. I mean, first he came out with Soft and Wet. He came out at the end of the Funkadelic Parliament era, got laughed at. Then he went on tour. Believe it or not, he opened for Rick James back in 1980. I think that's when Controversy came out. So he still basically had a rock audience. And then when the album that came out had Uptown and Head, you know, let's call it like it is, Prince had some risque stuff. I mean, Head barely got played on the radio. Then his musicality came out. I remember, I think he opened for the Rolling Stones and got booed off stage, and that's when he went into his, you know, not giving interview periods, what have you. So I kind of want to say, even though I'm in my late 40s, let's not act like, you know, Prince didn't have a lot of this risque, we don't want to, you know, can't play this on the radio with a lot of rappers now. He had the same thing 25, 30 years ago. He just, that's just the long view. You know, he's come full circle, you know, since 1979 through maybe like 85. You know, R&B early playing him.
Listen, you're talking to a Princeologist. So I hear what you're saying, and I understand. I know the history. And you are correct. You're right on that. But I think the difference with him is that he was so musically talented that maybe rightfully or wrongfully, people can kind of get with you a little bit better. But you're right. But still,
everybody was talented. Slave, Parliament, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Larry Graham. I mean, what he did didn't really stand out from what was going on back then. The only thing was different, he was a one-man band. That was the age of funk bands. And the only thing that kind of set him apart, he was self-contained. But he was self-contained so much that he turned people off, like the time, you know, let's call it like it is. He ripped some people off, the time, Alexander, and other people.
You can't say he ripped those people off because he wrote their music, if you're going to be honest.
He didn't give no money.
If you want to talk about Alexander O'Neill, if you want to talk about the time, all that stuff, because you're talking to a Princeologist now, Prince wrote that music. He wrote the Times music. Because he performed some of this stuff by himself. He performs Cool in concert to this day because it's his song. So I don't know. We could talk about, you know, him having a Napoleon complex and ripping off people, but the man is unquestionably talented. He was billed as a Stevie Wonder who could see. And that might be a good connection. And actually, Warner Brothers, he was signed at 16, and he wasn't even, like, you were correct. there were so many talented people in the 70s, black folk, that he was passed around by different companies. People passed on Prince because, you know, there were guys that could do what he could do, theoretically. Now the landscape has changed. But getting back into his body period, and I have to shout out to his royal badness. He celebrated his 55th birthday. He just turned 55. His birthday was yesterday.
Hey, Dean, let me ask you a question to the crew, and I'll hang up and listen. What has held up better, the album with 1999? Excuse me. I'm having a brain fart. Thriller. Or the soundtrack for his, that had Let's Go Crazy and, you know, all that. Which has held up better?
Purple Rain.
Purple Rain, I'm sorry. Which has held up better over time, Thriller or Purple Rain? Now hang up and listen.
All right. That's a fair question. I almost forgot that I should have, normally I would do a Prince show. And you might want to go into the archives to check out. And also, incidentally, if you've been listening for a long time, we interviewed his childhood friend. A few months, was it last year, Captain? Andre Simone?
Yes, it was last year.
We tweet each other, which is like, you know, it's a cat's meow for me to tweet one of my heroes. So I tweet and we go back and forth. And actually, he's probably going to be on a show at some point in the future because he likes what we do. So you're speaking to a person who knows Prince pretty well. And we had Maceo Parker on a few months ago. So you may want to go to the archives. And we've done all Prince shows. I think he's gone through this bawdy period, very bawdy, very suggestive period. He's been allowed to mature. And actually, a lot of folks, as I said to his chagrin, are not really welcoming of him shying away from his more bawdy material. I think because he was so weird that it didn't stick as necessarily being part of the landscape. I don't think people could really identify with Prince. But folks can identify with Lil Wayne because there are people who are rocking his look, are young people. That is the irony, that the young folk who follow Lil Wayne and Drake and Rihanna, they are mimicking these people. No one mimicked Prince. His stuff didn't translate to the masses, really. And that's probably why he has gotten away with far less criticism, so to speak. And even Tipper Gore, when Purple Rain came out, this is what you... Now, Tipper Gore came out with the whole parents advisory sticker that we see on these, you don't really see them anymore because you don't have any physical records. Before there were physical records, when there were physical records, Tipper Gore, Al Gore's wife, was behind having these stickers as warning stickers for parents for adult music. And it was because of Prince. Now, when she spoke about Prince, this is what she said. She said, the man's a genius, but he's doing some suggestive music. You know, Darling Nikki talked about masturbation, female masturbation. You know what, Captain? That might have just proved my point. How do you have a person like Tipper Gore come out and say, hey, you know, Prince, we got to do something with this stuff because of children, but he's a genius. You know, geniuses get away with stuff, man.
That's kind of half
the stuff, ain't it? The folks, the lower tier musicians, not really geniuses.
Well, a lot of greats go through their situations. They have problems. You know, you've seen the situation when Elvis came along, where, you know, a lot of people said Elvis was a ripoff. You know, that's a whole other story. But people would say his movements and everything were real suggestive. You know, when we had Chuck Berry, people would say, oh, that kind of music is this, and this kind of music is that. But, you know, everyone goes through that period. Everyone goes through that period, and then they turn into the monster later on that we all appreciate. So that's just seems like the path that a lot of these individuals just essentially go through. But we still didn't answer the question, you know?
Oh, yeah. Purple Rain. by far. And maybe I'm biased because I'm a Prince fan. Prince supporter, I should say. I'm not a fanatic. A Prince supporter. But I think the musicality in that, well, you know what? Quincy Jones is behind Thriller, but Purple Rain has, I think, has lasted better. Matter of fact, a lot of Prince's music holds up better and sounds less dated. So I still hear his music. I hear Michael Jackson music too, but it doesn't. I don't know, man.
Off the Wall better.
Yeah, Off the Wall.
Than Thriller.
Wasn't an unabashed appeal for cross. It wasn't a crossover record.
Mm-hmm.
Although it sold about 7 million copies. That's a funny thing too. It did 7 million, as opposed to the 30 million that Thriller did. But Thriller was more of a blatant crossover appeal record, whereas Off the Wall was still very much in the soul R&B tradition. You know, but both records are to be respected because they were monsters. But I think Purple Rain, as far as musicianship and people who are musicians, look at that record, the guitar solos and just the way it was put together on a different level. So I think Purple Rain, in my opinion, holds up as a record you can play and still kind of like, wow, it still kind of does it. You know, listening to certain Miles Davis records, you know, Bitches Brew, still, there goes that B word, but Miles Davis was a genius, wasn't he? You see what I mean? Bitches Brew, but you will go to colleges and they will unpack on Bitches Brew. And someone will tell me that they will go to colleges and unpack on Jay-Z, too. I don't know. I can't call it now, Captain. Dr. Michael Eric Dyson had a course at Georgetown on Jay-Z. Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I'm missing something. The historical record will explain this. I just know that Miles Davis was a genius. Coltrane was a genius. You know, wow. Louis Armstrong was a genius. When these people are talked about in colleges and their music stands the test of time. That will be the ultimate answer to this stuff. The fact that Louis Armstrong music is still being played. Duke Ellington's music will continue to be played, and Duke Ellington should be given his props for being America's preeminent composer, Duke Ellington. So I don't know. I don't know.
This is just something I just want to add that speaks to Prince's image, especially his early image. Now, this is something that Melly Mel had said pertaining to Run-DMC. He said, when they were doing Grandmaster Flash, it's Melly Mel with the Furious Five, Furious Five and the Grandmaster Flash, he said, we wanted to look like rock stars. We did not want to look like the audience. The audience had to look at you more or less like you were a star. You didn't look like the audience. Run-DMC comes along, and they look like the audience. The audience, all of a sudden, really wasn't, now this is Melly Mel, not me saying, really wasn't paying to the music as much, because in actuality, we were better rhymers, we were more lyrical. They could relate to Run-DMC a lot more. Now, hence, you have these rappers today. Who do they look like? A lot of them dress like bums in the street, and some of them are millionaires. But the audience can relate to the individual very much so. It's just a point, you see? It is something interesting just to look at. You know, how the times have more or less changed. But, of course, we do have Miguel, don't we?
Yeah, you know, he did that
to the
split. You know, well, you know, something, when he performed at the Billboard Awards, he tried to do a Prince move. Didn't work out so well. You know, didn't work out so well. But, you know, I think that's, you know, we should have done a Prince show because
yes.
I'm the first guy to, because we've done it in the past. I should have had Michael Dean, who's a Princeologist as well, and we could have really, and that's the whole thing. They also do Prince shows over the, you know, they analyze this man. This man, he came with a lot of stuff, man. We kind of went off tangent today. That happens.
Of course. But of course. It happens.
It makes a good radio.
Yeah.
But and I have to call up on my hypocrisy. If that's if, you know, I'm going to be honest. I have to put it out there.
Nothing wrong with that, though.
What makes Prince so different than Lil Wayne? What makes Prince? But I've seen Lil Wayne pick up a guitar, Captain. I've seen him do it. Go to YouTube and look at it. It's disgusting. And I've seen people say, "Wow, he's really talented." The man can't play. Matter, you know something else? Let me mention this as well. W. Kamau Bell, who is an Afro nerd, who has a show on FX called Totally Biased, he showcased a black heavy metal group called Unlocking the Truth. Afro punk also has been. Unlocking the Truth, they're 12 years old from Flatbush, Captain. Well, I showed you them, I think, right?
Yes. Good band.
He's 12 years old. And they can throw down. And their parents are allowing them to be different. I got to try to contact these young men because why at 12? I mean, your colleagues or your contemporaries are into Lil Wayne and nonsense, but you're shredding the guitar at 12. So I love to see these young men. They're in the Times Square. They're making the rounds. Their video's going viral, Unlocking the Truth. Check out these young men, 12 years old, very proficient musicians. So I'm glad to see them doing something different, not doing the meme. You know what, Captain? We're going to have to pick this up again. I'm going to go out and more Prince music, damn it, because it's his birthday, and I'm a supporter.
That's all right.
This is Prince channeling the Commodores, Brick House, live. See you on Wednesday, folks. It's been real.